This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
That is not to say that those who take it upon themselves to take the lives of others are being encouraged to do so.
That's Alexander Afinio Marcane, lawyer and legislator on Ghana's parliament, passing legislation to end the death penalty. Details coming up also. The situation in Niger remains unsettled as the president is being held in his residence in an apparent coup attempt. And African leaders are heading to the Russia-Africa summit, which starts tomorrow. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Reuters News reports that Benin's president is heading to Niger today as the Economic Community of West African States condemned what it called an apparent coup. The UN Secretary General and the United States also both condemned what appears to be an effort to seize power by force in Niger. Sources are telling international news organizations that Niger's president, Mohamed Bazoum, is being held by members of his guard. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned in the strongest terms any effort to seize power by force and to undermine democratic governance, peace and stability. In the United States, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the U.S. is deeply concerned about today's development in Niger. Earlier today, VOA's Carol Van Damme talked with Idriss Fall, a senior editor with VOA's French service, about the situation in Niamey.
Presidential guards are holding Niger President Mohamed Bazoum inside his palace in the capital. It is not clear if this is a coup attempt. Idriss Fall, who is a senior editor at VOA's French to Africa service, is joining us by phone. Idriss, thanks for being here. What can you tell us about the latest situation on the ground?
Still the confusion in Niamey because we don't know if it is a coup. What we know is the soldiers, the presidential guard, took the palace, surrounding palace, and also yesterday night they kind of arrested the interior minister. In the beginning, they were saying there were negotiations between them and President Bazoum, but President Bazoum until now, even earlier, issued a statement telling that the upper part of the army, but that statement was withdrawn later. And until now, there is a novel group of soldiers who came from the west of Niger, close to the border of Mali and Burkina Faso, from the city of Walam. And they are now surrounding the radio, and there also we don't know, are they surrounding the radio to protect it, or are they surrounding the radio because they joined the presidential guard? We don't know yet.
Okay.
Really, the situation is very, very confusing for the time being.
Sure. West Africa's key regional and economic bloc, ECOWAS, says it's concerned. This is actually an attempted coup. What is it calling for at this time?
What they call an attempted coup. And they condemn firmly, telling that the soldiers who does not want to respect their constitutional right to defend the constitution, I think. As the same for African Union, you know, they use very strong words against what's happening in Niamey right now. And they call it also a coup attempt, but it's not over yet. It's not over yet because normally if something happens, we should know about it at 8 p.m. tonight in Niamey. It means 5 p.m. Washington time.
Right, your local time, 8 p.m. The presidency apparently put out a statement saying the national army is ready to attack the guards if they do not come to their senses, quote unquote, and then retracted that statement. Is there any indication that the members of the presidential guard are backing down?
Not for the moment, because they are still surrounding the presidency. And even myself, I tried to call his own guards. And in the beginning, they told me, you can call him directly on his phone. And whenever I tried twice, he did not answer. So I think he may not be free of his speech or movement. So until now, we don't know what's going on inside the palace, the presidential
right.
palace.
I know you're not there, but you are in touch with people there on the ground. What's going on in the rest of the capital at this hour?
Well, people are doing their business. It looks like nothing is happening in Niamey. Even I saw some people crossing the big avenue close to the presidency, and they are walking or driving their cars. It looks like there's nothing happening. So we don't know yet. Even some soldiers should leave the city of Diffa, which is southeast there, around 1,000 kilometers from Niamey. They were supposed to come to Niamey because there's something happening there on August 3rd. And those soldiers also retracted and returned to Diffa. They did not come to Niamey. So we don't know yet. Maybe by 8 p.m. we should better know if they do a declaration at the national radio or not, or whatever issues Mr. Bazoum will speak or not. We don't know. It's too soon.
That's Idris Fall. He is senior editor at VOA's French to Africa service, and he's been joining us live by phone.
African leaders began arriving in Russia today for a summit with President Vladimir Putin as the Kremlin seeks more allies following its 2022 invasion of Ukraine. Putin has billed the two-day summit that opens tomorrow in St. Petersburg as a major event to help bolster ties with a continent of 1.3 billion people. Africa's 54 nations makes up the largest voting bloc in the United Nations. It's the second Russia-Africa summit since 2019. The number of heads of state attending shrank from 43 then to 17 now because of what the Kremlin described as a crude Western pressure to discourage African nations from taking part. Moscow, however, says 32 other delegations will be represented by senior officials or ambassadors. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov deplored what he called unconcealed brazen interference by the U.S., France, and other states to pressure nations not to attend. Ghana's parliament has voted to abolish the death penalty. The move comes 3 decades after the West African nation carried out its last execution. Rights groups Amnesty International has hailed yesterday's vote, calling it a landmark decision and urging President Nana Akufo-Addo to cite it into law. Kenneth Mensah reports from the Ghanaian capital, Accra.
Under current law, the death penalty in Ghana can be imposed after conviction for genocide, piracy, smuggling, murder, or high treason. Under the 1960 Criminal and Other Offences Act, the punishment can be carried out by hanging or by firing squad. However, the West African country has not executed anyone in 30 years. And this week, Parliament approved a bill to eliminate capital punishment completely. Francis Xavier Susu, the opposition MP who sponsored the bill, tells VOA the development is a milestone for Ghana's democracy and called on President Akufo-Addo to commute the sentence of those on death row now to life imprisonment.
Well, I think this is a very, very good news for Ghana because it adds to our democratic credentials and adds to our human rights records as a nation, particularly when since 1993 we haven't been able to use the death penalty as a means of punishing offending persons and people who are condemned to serve death sentences were only kept in the condemned cells. And so I think it's a win for Ghana.
Since 1977, Amnesty International has been campaigning for the global abolition of the death penalty. Reacting to news that Ghana's parliament voted to abolish the practice, the International Rights Group issued a statement saying, quote, "It is a victory for all those who have tirelessly campaigned to consign this cruel punishment to history and strengthen the protection of the right to life," unquote. However, not everyone in Ghana welcomes the lawmaker's decision. Harry Agbanu, a religious lecturer at the University of Ghana, said the abolition of the capital punishment would be an incentive for people to take the law into their hands.
The floodgate has been opened for violent criminal activities by some members of our society. That is unfortunate, and I'm just praying that the opportunity is not being created for people to take the law into their own hands by engaging in you know, this mob action. There has not been any sound argument in favor of the abolishment of the death penalty.
For his part, Alexander Afenyo-Makin, a lawyer and a governing New Patriotic Party MP, said the decision is not meant to embolden criminals, but rather to uphold more humane ways of dealing with criminals.
That is not to say that those who take it upon themselves to take the lives of others are being encouraged to do so. God gives us life. And under no circumstance should a person's life be taken merely because of commission of such an offense. In its place, we have introduced a life in prison.
The total number of people facing the death penalty in Ghana at the moment stands at 176, including 6 women, according to prison authorities' records. President Akufo-Addo is expected to assent to the bill in the coming weeks, administration sources say. Ghana now joins a league of 29 out of 55 African countries that have abolished the death penalty. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Senegal President Macky Sall says 23 people died today when a bus crashed in the northern part of the country. The French news agency AFP reports that a National Fire Brigade official and a first responder say over 50 were injured in the accident in the village of Nougoun Sare in Louga region. They did not specify the cause or time of the accident. AFP says 2 crashes in January led the government to announce a long list of measures, including a ban on overnight bus journeys. But transportation professionals said many of the measures were unrealistic. The wire service says in many countries in Africa, dilapidated vehicles, reckless driving, and corrupt law enforcement officials all contribute to road tragedies. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Ruhibi in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. During a just-concluded state visit to Beijing, Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune held talks with Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping. Xi expressed China's readiness to work with Algeria to accelerate implementing the outcomes of the first China-Arab State Summit. William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi the strategic vision China has for Africa and the Arab world.
This meeting or set of meetings was diplomatically very important for both countries, in part because China is now, in many respects, Algeria's lead international partner. And China has always seen for many decades Algeria as its lead partner in Africa and the Arab world, going back to immediately after Algerian independence. And the way in which Algeria led the global non-aligned movement and China transformed that into its role in global South-South cooperation. So, for example, if you go to New York, the Chinese and the Algerians work very closely on a wide range of issues that's reflected in a lot of the rhetoric. Now, what this is masking a little bit is China's been deinvesting from Algeria. I looked into this in my own research and found that China had quietly cut its investments in Algeria by about half. And so increasingly, it seems like Algeria for China is more of a strategic partner than an investment location. And Algeria's noticed. And so part of what Tebboune wants to accomplish is to reverse that and get the Chinese investment back up. So there's a lot of sort of, let's say, indications here about global diplomacy and global norms that's baked into this Algerian-Chinese conversation. Each asserted their rights along these lines. You know, China congratulated Algeria for supporting its positions in Xinjiang and Taiwan, and both Algeria and China deflect a lot of human rights criticism about what happens interiorly by talking about their sovereign rights to do whatever they want within their borders. But amidst all this, China's been and Algeria have been changing a lot of their international relationships. As I said, China's been de-investing, and it's been shifting its investments in Africa towards lower risk, higher performing investments. So it decreased in Algeria, decreased in Kenya, decreased in Angola, decreased in a range of countries. Chinese investment in Africa dropped 55% last year to $7.5 billion. So even though it's still the number one investor in Africa, investor in Africa by half less. So if you look at Xi's language during the visit, while Tebboune was talking about increased investment, Xi was talking about steady, sustained investment. And that is probably at 2023 levels, not 2021 levels.
President Tebboune said that China is the most important friend and partner of Algeria. He expressed readiness for Algeria to take an active part in the Belt and Road Cooperation and deepen the Algeria-China Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, which will give a boost to economic and social development in Algeria. What's your take on that?
Because of the weakening of Russia, Russia is not doing as much in Algeria anymore, which makes the Chinese relationship with the Algerians even more important. And then, of course, that's that whole historic and geostrategic relationship. But bottom line, Tebboune is looking for more investment and a shifting of Chinese investment to new areas. Now, the Chinese have had difficulty working in Algeria, particularly with Algeria's private sector or parastatal sector, where there have been a lot of corruption problems and non-performance and prickly relationships. There were, like in several other African countries, scandals involving Huawei and corruption. And then China was doing a lot of vanity projects, like the largest mosque in Africa and a huge cultural center and medical facilities, which is not really performing investments with a return. The big highway investment for China didn't go well in Algeria. So where there's been some success is Chinese small businesses operating in Algeria. And I suspect that the shift reflected by the current, you know, rejiggering of the relationship is going to be new areas, particularly high tech areas where Chinese has technology the Algerians need. But the real problem here is that Algeria is not a good place for foreign investment. It still has pretty restrictive foreign ownership rules, repatriation of profits rules, and it has prickly relationships with Europe, particularly France and Spain. It's traditionally sort of European partners that make it very hard for the Europeans to invest. So they're hoping they can sort of push China to invest more, even if China would prefer that Algeria actually have a more open economy that had greater growth rate rather than this somewhat closed economy it has now.
That was William Lawrence, professor of international relations at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shanawi. Analysts say a spat between Sudan and Kenya is hurting regional efforts to mediate an end to the war in Sudan. This week, a Sudanese general accused Kenyan President William Ruto of favoring the paramilitary forces battling the Sudanese army after Ruto suggested deploying East African peacekeeping troops to Sudan. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba, South Sudan.
Anwar Ibrahim Ahmad, an Ethiopian political analyst who monitors the Horn of Africa region, says a recent uptick in tensions between Sudanese army leaders and the Kenyan government could hinder efforts to restore peace and stability in Sudan. He adds that members of the East African bloc, IGAD, will have to consider a grievance raised by Sudan over Kenyan President William Ruto. Ruto leads an IGAD subcommittee called the Quartet Group, tasked with mediating an end to Sudan's 3.5-month-old war. Sudan's government has repeatedly accused Ruto of having business ties with the paramilitary rapid support forces. Ruto denies the allegations. However, Sudanese leaders have refused to cooperate with the Quartet Group until he is replaced. Ibrahim says IGAD is supposed to have a speedy response to Sudan's rejection of Ruto's role as head of the Quartet Group, and says IGAD should have intervened with a new mechanism to respond to the demands of Sudanese military leaders in order to prevent further tensions. On July 10th, the Ruto-led Quartet Group proposed deploying a regional coalition of peacekeeping troops in Sudan to protect civilians and secure humanitarian corridors. Sudanese army leaders rejected the move as an invasion. Addressing the Sudanese engineering corps over the weekend in Omdurman, Lieutenant General Yasser Al-Atta, Assistant Commander-in-Chief of the Sudan Armed Forces, criticized Ruto for interfering with Sudanese internal affairs. He says the Sudanese army is capable of defending its own country and routing what he described as armed mercenaries. Alato challenged Ruto to face the Sudanese army. Alato says President Ruto should leave East African Reserve Forces alone and instead he should come along with the Kenyan army to face us. On Monday, Kenyan Foreign Minister Alfred Mutua responded cautiously to the remarks which were reported by the TRT Africa channel, saying that Kenya has yet to get the full context of what General Alato said. Mutua indicated that the government cannot rely on information shared through social media to respond to an issue with diplomatic implications. We cannot verify the authenticity of the video or whether the Sudanese army officer actually made these statements, he said. Zuhair Janda, a member of Kenya's national parliament, condemned Alato's statement. In a video shared on social media and seen by VOA, Janda said Ruto's intention is to ensure that peace prevails in Sudan and people have access to aid. He says Kenya has no interest in who governs Sudan, but the people must be protected.
Our business with Sudan is not about who leaves Sudan. Our business is to ensure the humanitarian corridor is open so that the people in Sudan should not die. They should be given food. They should be given medicine.
Meki Al-Maghribi, a Sudanese former diplomat to the U.S., downplayed the tensions between the two countries, saying Kenya has enough internal issues to solve. He says the statement of Alata was not a surprise to many Sudanese because of the long military rule in Sudan.
Maybe for Kenyan people this is new, but for Sudanese people, because they have long history with war, it is normal for army leaders to defend the country by strong species.
The United Nations said more than 3 million people have been displaced due to the conflict in Sudan, both internally and across the border into neighboring countries. Michael Atit for VOA News, Juba, South Sudan.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
On August 4th, VOA Africa celebrates its 60th anniversary. Have you been listening for long? Do you want to celebrate with us? Give us a call on WhatsApp and leave a message and wish your friends here a happy anniversary. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. That number again, plus one, then 202-258-3076.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including protests continue in Israel after the country's parliament approved the first major law and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's contentious plan to limit the country's justice system.